But, you know, from the very beginning, I was absolutely astonished by the quality of work, that was coming out of the program, and also, you know, the profound commitment to nonfiction, fiction work, experimental work on behalf of the students. So I find myself even today, you know, working on really impressive films by younger people, and you know, it's a real thrill to be. There's something very magical about VCFA, and I don't really know exactly what it is that, you know, how the chemistry of all of this worked out, but it's a very special place.
Hi, this is Adam Shartoff, your host of Filmworks Radio. It's Monday, October 7th, 2019. Welcome to a bonus episode of the podcast. It's episode number 578, and this episode has two guests who are both from the Vermont College of Fine Arts film community, if you will. One is an alum named Michael Staffieri, who is a filmmaker, and the other is Michelle Negroponte, who is a good friend of the podcast, had been on a number of times, and he is faculty at the school. He's a much respected and beloved teacher there in the master's program, and I'm very happy to have the Vermont College as a sponsor of the show. And so what we've decided to do is a few episodes introducing various people from the community there, students, past students, and faculty alike. The Vermont College of Fine Arts MFA in Film offers a two-year student design, project-driven graduate program of professional mentorships for your scripts, your fiction and nonfiction filmmaking, and transmedia projects. Each semester begins with an on-campus residency week of screenings, workshop lectures, and crits, along with preparation of an independent study plan with your personal projects. Then students and faculties return home to work independently and meet monthly via Skype as projects unfold. The MFA program is designed to fit into the life you have and the films you make. Exciting, affordable, and intense. Refine your creative vision as you develop intensely personal stories in an independent practice. Visit vcfa.edu/film for more details. Mention FilmWax if you do. But if you go through recent episodes or search the website under VCFA, you'll be able to listen to many testimonials from many alumni as well as faculty at VCFA. And this episode is no exception. We are going to now talk to Michael Staffieri again, who is a filmmaker and now creating new works out in the world. This is my conversation with Michael Staffieri here on FilmWax Radio.
She said, I think you should find something that's not so intense, that you have to, you know, go away for 3 years, that you can work in the meantime. And she was giving me all these parameters. But thank God she did, because I sort of just, you know, typed it into Google, and VCFA is one of the first things that came up. And their website looked very interesting. And then I reached out to the people there, and they were very warm and inviting, and answered all my questions and invited me up to come to one of the residencies to see how they did things and if I liked it, and the rest is history.
So how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you. One thing I'd like to ask, in a way, to start the conversation, I think, is as a graduate of the Vermont College of Fine Arts Master's in Film program.
Yes.
And I don't know if you need some time to think about it, but what you felt that experience meant to you, you know?
I always get so kind of sentimental about it. Oh, and it's funny because I'm you know, the antithesis of that. I'm kind of pragmatic and I detest cheap sentiment, but I adored being at VCFA and I miss it. It was like this fun, strange, exciting, weird artist commune that I would go to every 6 months for, 2 years. So I miss it. It was totally energizing and, really rewarding. So I get, I always, whenever I think of it, I'm like, oh, I wish I could, maybe I'll just go back. I'll just show up and go back. But
it sounds like summer camp.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. It was like, you know, and I never went to summer camp, but I imagine that if I had gone, it would have been like that. You know, a bunch of, I did the commencement speech for my graduating cohort, as they call them. And I think I said in my speech, you know, it's like this little, you know, hippie commune on a hill. It's really,
yes.
It was this fun, exciting experience. I really treasured it. I loved it. And
wow. Well, how did you find it, if I can interrupt?
Yeah. So I was looking into graduate programs. One of my college mentor, and she's like a second mother to me, her name's Dr. Janet Farrell Leontou. She's a professor of communications. And I took a film course by her many, many, many years ago. And then she would invite me back every semester after I had graduated to mm-hmm. give a sort of a guest lecture to her film class. Mm-hmm. And I forget which time it was, maybe the first time or the second time, she said, you know, I think you should look into teaching. I think you'd do well with that. And it's something something I hadn't thought about, but it sort of bit me. The bug bit me, and I liked that idea. And then she was egging me on for years to go back to graduate school so I could get my master's so that I could teach.
Right.
And then finally, I said, you know what? I think I want to do this. So I was just researching schools, and it was kind of. She said, I think you should find something that's not so intense, that you have to, you know, go away for 3 years, that you can work in the meantime. And she was giving me all these parameters. But thank God she did, because I sort of just, you know, typed it into Google, and VCFA is one of the first things that came up. And their website looked very interesting. And then I reached out to the people there, and they were very warm and inviting, and answered all my questions and invited me up to come to one of the residencies to see how they did things and if I liked it. And the rest is history, I guess. And then I did that and I loved it. So I signed up.
Wow. So you're from Long Island. Were you living in Long Island or New York at the time?
I can't remember if I might have been living. Yeah, I'm from Long Island. I might have mm-hmm. been living in Brooklyn at the time, but mm-hmm. But yes, I was here, and you know, went up for a weekend to see how they did things, and stayed in their dorms and fell in love
right.
with this.
So you're kind of going for practical purposes, it sounds like, because you're wanting to teach, you need a master's. So that was the impetus for you to go. And then once you started getting the vibe for the place, it seemed like obviously a great fit. You got a good sense about them.
Yeah, I totally went with a purpose. You know, I mm-hmm. That's what I wanted. I wanted I wanted the mm-hmm. degree. Yes.
Yeah.
But I'm the kind of person that. I kind of thrive in an academic atmosphere. I like being a student. I like being in school. I always liked school, especially higher education. So it was like, you know, it was like dipping back into a, you know, it was like dipping into a warm pool. I was just happy mm-hmm. to be there. And I like a bit of structure. And the great thing about VCFA is, I mean, I guess you can apply this to anything in your life, is it's you take what you bring to something. So I went, you know, fully prepared to work my ass off and to get out of it as much as I possibly could. The people that they bring in, the guest lecturers, the filmmakers, the faculty that are there, these are people that are, you know, a lot like someone that comes to mind, for instance, is Josephine Decker, is one of the faculty there. Like, yeah. Here you have this very young, very interesting filmmaker who's kind of built a wonderful career for herself, and it's not out of nepotism, it's not out of, you know, Hollywood royalty or something like that. She doesn't come from a lot of money. It's like she just built up a career because she's talented and worked really hard. So I love being around people like that.
I was in a movie with her.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, it was a small independent film made by a mutual friend of ours, and we were both cast in the film, and that's when I met her. That's how I got to know her originally, and then I know that she had been doing some Swanberg films at the time.
Yeah.
And but you saw a light emanating from this person. You know, she has a beautiful energy, totally non-judgmental type of person, totally open-hearted, and the next thing you know, you're hearing that she's making her own films, and holy crap, with each one, she's just, seems like she's just growing and growing.
Yeah, it's she's definitely, you know.
She's fierce.
Yes, it's a very powerful energy when she walks into a room. But
yes,
it's definitely, it's abrasive, but in the most gentle of ways, I guess is the best way to describe it. But like, you know, people like her or Nina Davenport, she was my advisor for a semester. Mm-hmm. You know, she makes these incredibly personal documentaries, and she's also a hoot on top of it. But just being around all these people who have just sort of built these careers from the ground up because they have stories to tell. I love that. So I didn't feel threatened or judged. It was just such a warm atmosphere.
Yeah, because a lot of times I imagine when you go into certain programs, it could be competitive, right? It could be, that could have that tension there.
Yeah, I think the film industry in general is such a competitive.
It's true.
Competitive beast. I'm the most least competitive person. I don't care.
Gene.
Yeah, I don't have that gene. No, it was, you know, and like there's this funny Scorsese quote that I heard when I was a teenager that always resonated with me, which was anything with a ball, no good, because it's just like I'm not into competition. I'm not into sports. I don't want to play.
I wore glasses, and so that was my excuse.
Yeah, same.
And did you have your aesthetic? Did you have your voice yet when you got there? Do you, as a filmmaker, do you feel like that you were able to tap into it as a result of going, or do you feel like you had already had that and it was just sort of being nurtured there?
I think it was a bit of both. I think I'm still trying to find my voice, as they say. I mean, I can say that the advisors that I did have when I was at VCFA all seemed to agree that I had a distinct voice, which I was always like, I do. I have no idea what you're talking about. But that was always nice to hear. But it was always nurtured. And I think whatever I did bring that I already had with me was very carefully handled, and the three advisors that I did have, which was Nina Davenport, Laura Colella, and Maria Cohn, they all were very motherly and did nurture everything that I brought, because I'd like to think that I have certain influences and that I try to stick to a certain vision that I hope I have, but you know, I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's a tricky thing. I don't know your age, and I don't know how many years you've been making films, but, you know, we all bring in our influences and our inspirations, and we really immerse ourselves in that. I mean, you can't escape those things.
Right.
It takes a while. And then it's not so much rejecting them one day, although I guess you do that too, but it's often something just grows out of that, you know, ultimately. So it never feels like you're actually leaving some of your heroes behind or whatever, but they're with you always going forward. You know?
Yeah, they always stay with you. It's like, you know,
they stay with you, right?
It's like a scent. You get a whiff of something, and it brings back all those memories. It's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I'm about to turn 32, mm-hmm. and I've had a camera in my hand since I was about 10.
Wow.
So it's, I think my taste has evolved, but the passion and the love for it has always been there.
Where did that start?
I don't know. There wasn't a time in my life where I didn't want to work in movies.
Really?
Yeah. It's my earliest memory. I wanted to be, first I wanted to be an actor because I thought that that's how movies got made. I thought all actors
right.
All actors were friends with each other, and then they just called each other up, and that's how things got.
Right, and as a 10-year-old, who knows what a director is? I mean,
yeah, and
maybe maybe now because of the proliferation of how it's in everybody's homes and everybody's phones, and you know, that we see that more now, and directors are becoming kind of superstars like Quentin Tarantino,
right?
Martin Scorsese, you mentioned. Josephine Decker.
Yeah, exactly. But so, yeah, it was, so I wanted to be, at first I wanted to be an actor. And I remember this, I was 5 years old and I was in first grade, and we had to make all the students in Mrs. Fleming's class had to make these
paper. Oh, yes, these, Mrs. Fleming.
You know her, right? We had to make these paper cutouts of what we wanted to be when we grew up. And, mine was Dracula because I wanted to be an actor and I wanted to play Dracula, and that's all.
Oh, good choice.
All I wanted to do. It never went away. And then I think I was around, I think I was 10, 9 or 10, or maybe I was 8 even. Mm-hmm. And, Psycho was on television, and,
you couldn't have not have watched it.
And I had, like, it was the first time I had, like, a visceral reaction to a film. And it was the scene where Martin Balsam gets killed and falls down the steps. And I remember thinking, okay, wait a minute. There's some hand going on behind the scenes here.
That's right.
That's when I sort of became aware of what a director was.
Right. I know what you mean. I think that scene where, you know, you're on the landing and you're with them because you're looking down.
Yeah.
And Norman, as his mother, races out of whatever room.
Uh-huh.
And then she stabs
Arbogast.
Arbogast. Very good. Thank you for that, Michael.
No problem.
And then he does this 15, 20 minute kind of like what feels like that long.
Yeah.
And then something's going on with the camera work, and something's happening where he's waving his arms, trying to get his balance or something. And you're right. It feels so incredibly directed at that moment. Somebody's there at work. You're right. I could see how that would be a moment.
Yeah. There's so many elements happening in that one specific, like even that there's like that, you know, Hitchcock cuts to that very, very super, super ridiculous high angle. Looking down, and it's just, I don't know. It's still my favorite movie. So I had a reaction to it that never went away. And, then I grew up, you know, in a family of pretty, cinema literate people. So
that makes a big difference. Sure.
And so my aunt Patrice is a huge Hitchcock fan. So I showed an interest, and all of a sudden she had all these movies on VHS, and she had all these books on him, and all filled with all these pictures and stills from the movies. So then He was like my gateway drug into everything.
And I think a lot of people could probably say that. But,
oh, totally. Yeah.
But as a kid, also, you can get a book like that, as I used to also, and you just kind of like study it, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, you pore over a book over and over, and you just look at the pictures. That's something that only exists when you're a young kid and you're alone and you have a lot of time on your hands, and you know, the days are long, and you could do that, you know.
And then that's how it began. And then I just had an insatiable, like, my appetite for movies was insatiable. I just watched everything and anything that I could get my hands on. And I still try to, although it fades, yeah, as you get older. But after Hitchcock sort of came Scorsese, because I loved my grandmother, God bless her, showed me Taxi Driver way too young.
You're a very warped person.
Yes, I am. Yes.
You watch Psycho and Taxi Driver way
too
young.
Before puberty. That's pretty dangerous. But
I agree.
But thank God she did. And it's so interesting because those films, you know, Taxi Driver is so Hitchcockian. So it was a nice through line. I think the most important Scorsese films for me were his documentaries. He did that. I think it was for PBS, A Journey Through American Cinema, I think it's called.
Yep. Yeah.
And then My Voyage,
the Italian.
Voyage to Italy, or My Voyage Through Italy, something like that. And so then that opened up all the Italians for me. And then I was obsessed with Fellini and Rossellini and Pasolini, and I couldn't get enough. And so,
So you're not talking about his rock documentaries. You're talking about his cineast, cinephile documentary. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Although the rock documentaries too, but later.
Right.
But those film documentaries I saw very early on, and those were very, I mean, that's like going to film school, those films.
You know Mark Cousins?
I don't.
You do, but you don't know you do.
Oh, I don't know I do.
He's the Scottish guy who does that great narration over the story of film and Odyssey.
Oh, sure.
And so you know it. And then he just has a new documentary recently came out called The Eyes of Orson Welles, which is really more about Orson Welles's painting, you know.
Ah. I'll have to see that.
I just figured that, yeah, you should. It's beautiful, and it is powerful. Mark Cousins is one of the best documentary filmmakers working.
Yeah. I've
seen those two, but they're both masterworks, you know.
Though that documentary series he did about cinema is like,
I know.
Oh, my God.
I know.
It's incredible.
Yeah, he just ties everything together seamlessly, and his voice is like hypnotic.
Yeah.
I got to see it again or get a copy because it's just was so brilliant.
Yeah, it was really great.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I also went up for a residency once, the Vermont College of Fine Arts, which is what we've been talking about, VCFA Masters in Film Program. So they invited me up there one year, and I was like, well, what do you want me to do? And they were like, nothing, just come up and see it.
Yeah.
So I brought my son. We made it a little bit of a vacation. And, you know, I mean, I did a podcast. I interviewed a bunch of people that were there. It was a lot of fun. I mean, I got to sit in on, you know, a few classes and just be a fly on the wall.
Yeah. The lectures are always, I mean, people can have their, I know there was always like, you know, there's always a little bit of gossip and nonsense that goes on when you're up there, because it's a small group of us. So naturally it's going to happen. But I was just thrilled by them. I was always excited about them. And especially the crit sessions, which is a big part of VCFA, where you're there for a week, you create a semester based around your schedule. And then you go away for 6 months and work on whatever it is that you decide, that residency. And then you have these wonderful critiques where you get to show the work that you've just done over the past 6 months. And I always found those that was one of my favorite parts of it. And maybe because I studied painting for 2 years when I was in college. Mm-hmm. So I was very much used to critiques, because that's what you do. You work on a painting and then you show it to the class and rip it apart right. for 45 right. minutes. But that's the growth. That's where the, you know, that's where the, the process comes into play, which is for me the most important part of it.
Yes.
The product is sort of secondary. It's the process that's the most important aspect of, I think, being a creative person.
Mm-hmm. So the first, there's the first residency, which is about presenting your idea, and then you, the second residency after the 6 months is about showing it and getting yes. Getting the feedback.
Exactly.
I see. Very good. And you made two short films. I mean, was that your basically your project, your degree, the two that I saw?
So very early on, so I had Nina for my first, she was my first advisor. And she came out of the gate saying, she said, I think you should make a short film every month and hand that in. And so I said, okay, I haven't done that in a long time, but I'll try it. So, but I did do that, and I ended up keeping up with that for the most part. From the first residency to all the way to through to the end. So I have these we called them micro shorts. Some of them are 2 to 5 minutes, I suppose. And I made one a month for every month that I was there.
I see. Right.
And then there are two sort of longer form short films. One is my one is my master's thesis, and the other was just a short film project that I wanted to make, that I also have, which is about, I think, just under 10 minutes or exactly 10 minutes, something like that, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. which is about the painter, the Austrian painter, Egon Schiele.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I ended up leaving VCFA with quite a number of little projects because I just, you know, made these little micro shorts once a month.
Wow. So that was a unique, it sounds like that's a unique thing. Most people go in, I imagine the majority of people are going in and they're doing like their documentary or mm-hmm. their narrative or some experimental film or.
Yeah, I think it was unique. But I was glad to do it. It was almost like journal entries.
Yes. That's what it sounds like.
Which was great because I didn't feel compelled to make a masterwork every month, but it was like these fun exercises that I got to make mistakes and try something out. And, you know, one of them is a little sci-fi film about an alien, and the other one, you know, it was a little documentary about my grandmother getting her hair done by my mother, who's a beautician. So they were just these fun little. Yeah, the way I can describe them is like they're like journal entries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's totally a great way to describe them. Have you made a feature yet? Or is this something you're even interested in?
Yeah, no, I'm very interested in making a feature film. I've been working on one for a long time now, which I think will be my first. So okay. I'm in the process of finishing it. And then I'm going to try and I have a friend who's a fairly successful producer, so we'll see where it goes.
Gotcha.
I'm praying to the film gods that something happens with it.
And as far as teaching, as you mentioned, are you now teaching film, or are you looking to teach film?
Yeah, last semester I taught at Hofstra University.
Oh, great! Yeah, sure.
And I taught at Nassau Community College.
Mm-hmm.
I taught media studies at Nassau, and I taught a film production course at Hofstra.
Great. So if you're on Long Island and you're listening,
sign up.
You could be a student of this great filmmaker, Michael Staffieri. don't deprive yourself of that experience.
Your lips to God's ears. Yeah.
And how do you reconcile getting a degree, being an alumni? What do you do now that you're cut off from this place that sounded like paradise for you? How do you deal with that?
I had a little bit of postpartum depression when I left.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah,
sure.
Because like I said, I loved the structure. So it's been hard to keep that momentum,
mm-hmm.
but I I, you know, like I said just a minute ago, the process is always so more, is always more important, almost more important than the product. So as long as you're always working towards something, mm-hmm. then you're in the right direction. So mm-hmm. I try to write a little bit every day, or read a little bit every day, or watch a movie every day. And I always think of that as moving toward creating something. You know, I always think of the Michael Powell, who's one of my favorite filmmakers, even toward the very end of his life when he hadn't made a film for many, 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 many years, and he was dying of cancer. He never stopped preparing for the next film, even though he knew he was never going to make it.
I understand. It's a matter of being a filmmaker to the last breath, right?
Yep.
I get it. Being a filmmaker doesn't necessarily mean always having to, be shooting something or editing something. It could just, it's how you, exist.
I think it's just a way of it's a way of being a creative person.
Yeah, that's a good point. I never heard anybody quite articulate that. I never thought of it that way, but that's a great thought.
Yeah. So I always have the image of Michael Powell in my head when you're just like, all right, when you don't want to do anything, it's just do a little something that works toward the end result.
Well, I had a really nice day today because I started it off kind of watching a Hitchcock film.
Uh-huh.
The Lady Vanishes.
Oh, yes. That's a good one.
And I ended up talking with Michael Staffieri about movies and filmmaking. So it was a good day.
I'm glad.
So I guess the next step is when you have your, feature project, we don't necessarily have to wait, but you can definitely come on and talk about that experience making it and getting it out in the world, and we'll do this again.
I love that. That'll give me something to look forward to.
it's like a reward for and we can do it in person, of course, too. That would be fine. But
yeah,
where do people go to, first of all, look at your film work? Because there is quite a bit of it. And should people go to your Vimeo page, or should they go to your website, or... It's all embedded on your website, right? So
yes, I have. I think most of them are embedded on my website, which is myname.com, michaelstaffieri.com. And if not, if you go to Vimeo, you can put in my name and find my micro shorts and et cetera.
Very good.
Yeah.
And you're on any sort of, social media, like people can find you like on Twitter?
I don't have a Twitter. I have an Instagram.
No, that's just as legitimate. So
yes, I can't confine myself to those, those limited characters. but Instagram I like because it's just it's images. So I feel more comfortable there.
Right, that would be fitting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Oh, thank you so much. I so appreciate it. It was great.
All right, Michael. Take care.
Bye, Adam.
Not surprisingly, Michel Negroponte is in the center of a Venn diagram, if you will, between the Camden International Film Festival, which is one of the great documentary film festivals in this country, and, of course, the Vermont College of Fine Arts MFA in Film program. He is a faculty there. The Vermont College of Fine Arts, is a recurring sponsor of the Camden Festival. And in this year, because at least two people, Ian Cheney, who was on a recent episode, and now Michel Negroponte, have films in the Camden Festival, and they both come from the Vermont College film program. The college decided to sponsor those screenings. And so Michel is here on this show representing my Camden dispatches, as well as an association that I have, or this podcast has, with the Vermont College. And so Michel has a brand new film. It premiered at Camden, which I think was very appropriate, called My Autonomous Neighbor. Just to give you an idea of his history, Michel is an award-winning filmmaker who has been making feature-length documentaries for more than 30 years. He was born and raised in New York City and studied filmmaking with the legendary filmmakers Richard Leacock and Ed Pincus while he was at at MIT back in the 70s. In addition to making his own films, he has freelanced on countless films for HBO, PBS, the BBC, and Channel 4. He's also worked with independent filmmakers such as Ross McElwee, who, by the way, as a footnote, ended up doing the moderating the Q&A that I was at, my autonomous neighbor up at Camden. But he's also worked with Doug Block, who's a longtime friend of the podcast, Lisa Crafts, the recently deceased D.A. Pennebaker, and Chris Hegedus, Christine Choi, Dick Rogers, John Marshall, and Al Maisels. His films include Space Coast in 1979, Resident Exile in 1981, Silver Valley in 1984, Jupiter's Wife in 1994, No Accident in 1996, WISOR in 2000, Methadonia 2005, and I'm Dangerous with Love in 2009, followed by an autobiography of Michelle Marin, which was, I think, just a few years ago. We had him on the podcast with that film, as well as Michelle Marin. And now I'm really pleased to bring Michelle back to talk about his new film. This conversation happened, I think, it could have even partly been in Vermont while we were talking, because we were in the car coming back from Camden and driving to New York City. This is that conversation with FilmWax Radio friend, documentary filmmaker, Vermont College of Fine Arts faculty member, Michelle Negroponte, here on FilmWax Radio.
And now I'm going to do another one of these spiraling wormholes from hell thing and see where that goes. I think what I'm doing is I'm excavating the lower levels of the Bardo Plain. The universe wants to understand itself. It creates people like us who can have the brains to make the equations and the interpretations of reality in order to be able to explain this stuff at all. So it's not like it's a meaningless universe. It's a universe that wants to understand itself. Otherwise, it wouldn't create us. Challenge of the universe. If we knew everything had meaning, that would kind of take the fun out of it. I mean, you have to create meaning. You have to.
Driving in a car, we're right now outside of Boston. We were returning to New York from the Camden International Film Festival. We're near Lowell, Mass., the hometown of Jacques Kerouac.
Wow, that's right.
Ah, oui. He is a French Canadien.
The man who didn't write.
He was pretty remarkable, though. I don't know. Have you ever seen him read his from On the Road?
Actually, I have not. And I did read the book when I was a teenager.
Okay.
It's almost meant to be read. It's spoken word poetry.
Is there a recording of it? Like one of those...
Well, I tell you, there is... If you go to YouTube...
Yes.
There was a talk show host who had a television show in the early 60s, and he played the piano, and his name was...
Are we still playing the Trivia Pursuit game?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember his name. Price? No. Alan... I'm having yet another senior moment. Alan, but anyway, he had...
What's the show?
I'm forgetting the name of the show. He also...
Talk show host?
Yeah...
Jack Parr. He was
after Steve Allen, the second host of The Tonight Show.
I didn't really
before
know that.
Before Johnny Carson, right. After Steve Allen.
But he...
You have to turn right then.
Yeah.
So he had... He had Kerouac on as a guest. And it's an amazing sequence. He's playing the piano, Jack Parr, and Kerouac is reading from On the Road. It's kind of...
Beatnik,
it's definitely beatnik. And he's a good piano player. He's improvisational jazz. And it's beautiful.
Steve Allen was a piano player. He wrote songs. And Johnny Carson Did he play piano? I
don't know.
Anyway, but that's
was
not...
Johnny Carson, I think, originally was a stand-up comedic, if I recall.
Well, he's before that, he may have been. He was like also a did commercial spokesperson and game show host.
Game show
he
host?
He did all the requisite, yeah, like television spokesperson things before you. Yeah, I think there were a couple of game shows. We are heading on to I-90. Are we on I-95 still?
We're actually on 495. We're circumventing Boston.
Right. It does sort of a...
On our way back to New York.
Crescent-shaped highway. And it runs over the Mass Pike, right?
Maybe under.
Or under. It intersects, and that's a... That's
big truck. For 29 kilometers. Are we rolling?
Yeah. Hello,
that was a very, very big truck that just passed us on the highway. Did you get it? Did you pick it up?
Probably. So if the listeners haven't quite put it together, we are in a vehicle, as you mentioned before. We're heading to New York City from Camden, Maine.
From Camden, Maine.
Did you enjoy yourself?
Yeah, I did. I think it's a terrific festival.
Me too.
It's the first time I'd ever been
to
the Camden Film Festival. Yeah. You know, it's an incredible location. Right on the coastline with three small towns or that are quite close, quite connected, i.e. Rockland, Rockport, and Camden. And they're incredibly pretty. And they have five or six different venues where they show films from Thursday through Sunday.
And you premiered your most recent film at this particular festival, so you were—that's where you had your world premiere.
Right. No, and it
of
was
My Autonomous Neighbor.
Right, exactly. And it was the perfect place to world premiere My Autonomous Neighbor for.
It was
for the primary reason I say it was the perfect place was that Tate Billings, the subject of my film, the outsider artist, he lives in Sullivan County, which is. On the Catskills, but he's originally from Rockland, Maine. So not only did we premiere the film at the Camden International Film Festival, but the showing was at a movie theater in downtown Rockland that he used to go to as a child. It's called The Strand. And The Strand was, I think, 5 or 10 years ago, I forget exactly, was renovated. And it's a really fantastic.
It was renovated?
Yeah.
So it didn't look like, because it didn't look like a Walgreens to me.
It looked like an old art house movie theater to me.
I'm referencing so many theaters were turned into drugstores.
It's a theater that has a tremendous amount of character. And at the same time, it's state-of-the-art projection and sound. So it was terrific. It was really fantastic. And we had a huge turnout, which I was very pleased about.
Uh-huh.
And I thought the screening was great.
And I noticed you didn't ask me to moderate your what could possibly have been better.
Well,
than
I was.
Me
I know
at, you have even a deeper connection with somebody that you.
Well, I originally thought that you would be the moderator.
Oh, no.
But
I was kidding.
Then, honestly, I did. But then I think it was Ben Fowley, the director of the festival. I told him that Ross McElwee was going to come to the festival. And Ben was the one who suggested that he moderate Q&A. Because I've known Ross McElwee for 40 years. And... he's a great filmmaker, and I thought he did a great job.
He did. Yeah, no, it was great to see you guys, and along with Tate, your film subject. There was a nice convergence of connectivity there,
right?
With the location, everything has just really worked out exactly the way it should have, and the audience really was very happy, and it was even paired with a marvelous short because. Your film is about 40 minutes. And
no, it's 62 minutes long, my film.
Why did I think it was shorter than that?
Because it's high energy.
That's what it is. 40 minutes is just go, go, go.
Yeah. No, and the short film was terrific. It has a title that I can't pronounce.
Okay. But it was about a bar stool philosopher, or a bartender philosopher, in right. this case.
Yeah, and he was quite remarkable, because at first I thought it was a little stereotypical, and then the longer he was on screen and the more we heard from him, kind of the more surprising, you know, some of his philosophical statements and his worldview. I thought it was very poignant and funny, and in many respects a perfect companion piece to my film, My Autonomous Neighbor. So that also worked out beautifully well.
Not that anybody can guess this, but you have a co-director on the film, right?
Right.
Craig Lowy.
Craig Lowy, yes. And he's actually in the car with us.
Wait a minute, what? Where is he?
It's true. I actually am in the car.
Okay. So we're all traveling back to New York together.
That's amazing.
Craig,
keep your eyes on the road, Craig, if you're driving.
Yeah, Craig did the visual effects, and there are a number of them in my film.
It's very prominent.
It's a very prominent part, and was a very, very important collaborator. And I think by the time, you know, we got to the end of making this film, it just occurred to me that there's a lot of Craig's DNA in this movie, and that he really deserves to be credited as the co-director. So that was
very generous of you, because I would never have done that. My narcissistic nature. Craig Lowy, producer of this particular segment, did you look up the short by any chance? Did you do that?
I did. And here's the name, if anyone can read it.
The Magnitudius Illuminus. Did
okay.
I get that right?
I close enough.
It's an expression of his. Yeah, and he has. He does have.
Oh, right.
Made
he,
up.
Oh,
expressions
that's right. What's the other one that drew the most laughs?
The Hemnitz. The Hemnitz.
That's the Hemnitz.
And that's a sort of a crash of two different authors, Hemingway and Nietzsche. That for some reason he objects to. I'm not sure why.
I think that means that you have a negative spirit or a negative persona, or down. I think that was what he meant. I would have loved to be called a Nemich or whatever it is. It sounds right.
Since we brought it up, we'll mention the two director or the two filmmakers behind it. Rachel Mills is one, because I met her last night. Now, who's the other one? Tate and I were talking to Rachel. Tate was very animated and excited about meeting one of the directors of that. Why didn't it go to... I don't know how to...
Never mind. It didn't work.
Okay. Well...
I'll find it.
Okay. We're going to get back about that. We may as well plug that short. But anyway, the other connection, which we'll get to in a little bit with this particular film, is that there's another connection here. One of the sponsors of the Camden International Film Festival historically has been the Vermont College of Fine Arts.
Right.
At least their MFA film program. And... they, I think, took off a couple of years from doing that, from that relationship, but they came back this year because largely because your film was premiering there and they wanted to sponsor that. And then I know that also this year they happened to have another alumni, Ian Chaney,
who
premiered his documentary 13 Ways, which I also caught up with. And that, I guess, was enough for them to want to hop back on board. So
yeah, I mean, I think it was... I cannot tell you, because I don't know why they were not involved with the festival for a period of time, but they were very thrilled to get re-involved as
off-mic,
sponsoring it. And
sorry. I was going to say off mic that I know they went through changes in their marketing department,
right.
And the people that decide that, or
I see.
So it could have been that could have had something to do with it. I'm just guessing.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
That's true. You've reminded me. So, but anyway, VCFA was thrilled to get re-involved with the Camden International Film Festival as a sponsor, and we had my film and Ian Chaney's film, and he was an alumni, recent alumni. In fact, the festival included his thesis film for his MFA. 13 Ways,
wow,
which
it's in the remarkable
I was involved with. As a faculty member, I'm on the faculty at VCFA, and I was his faculty advisor during the making of that project. So I'm connected to it and proud of it.
The world keeps feeling smaller and smaller as we go on, right?
Right. So
producer Craig Lowy might have a... Okay, so Rachel Mills... Oh, okay, and Maya Tippett, she was listed as...
Co-director.
But she may have... she's also producer. And my friend Jessica Edwards, who's actually been on this podcast. Thank you, Siri. But Jessica Edwards has been on this podcast. She's quite a talented person, Jessica Edwards. If it's the same Jessica Edwards that I know, anyway, I'm pretty sure. But that takes... That's just the last thing I want to say, that... bowling alley where that short magnitudius eruptus
luminous
is a shot at was took place the regarding this fellow who's the bartender or a bartender there at this bowling alley, the Melody Lanes, which is in Sunset Park, Brooklyn. And I've had the occasion to go there many times, at least half a dozen times, take my son there or what have you. So it was nice to see it, but I never went into that bar. It's right there in the middle.
You have to wait till your son is a couple of years older, and then you can go into the bar together.
Yeah.
And I hope that...
And point at him, and I'll
the
say...
The fellow's still there.
He needs a drink. Then I know he will never get served. See? Inside joke. You have to see it. It's a shame more people can't see it. Like, you know, a short like that. I guess it can go on the website or her website or something like that. I mean, that's going to be... At least we have that.
I believe the film was showing this weekend... at two festivals, one the Camden Film Festival and the other the Coney Island Film Festival.
Right. Oh, right. That's where he was.
And that's where he was.
Yes, right.
With the other, with the co-director. So,
yeah.
You know, it's a kind of film that I could imagine being out on the festival route at a number of festivals. It's beautifully made. It's very fun and surprising. So... It's a terrific movie.
And it's interesting because I would imagine doing a film about a local, you know, character could be potentially, could stifle the potential for your short, because are other people from other outer-lying areas going to, or other areas going to appreciate that without knowing the references and stuff like that? But it's not the issue here because he's that larger than life and he's so amusing and so... likable a character that transcends.
Which I would say are many of the characteristics that Tate Billings, the subject of my film, has. I mean, I think Tate is...
Well done, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think Tate sort of is... I'm not quite sure. I mean, has maybe even a deeper philosophical bent, maybe a more offbeat sensibility. He's an outsider artist, so... But I thought there was also some... connection between the two characters in that they are eternal optimists. Tate feels very strongly that, you know, he wants the film to inspire younger artists to take a creative leap, and that was a very important aspect of the film for him, and I see that. Yeah.
Remind me how you first met Tate.
Well, my wife and I have had a place outside of the city. We live in New York, but we've had a place in the Catskills for more than 25 years. And he lives very close to us. That's why it's called My Autonomous Neighbor. Nonetheless,
so you're you're in the title.
I'm the My.
Okay.
Yeah. My Autonomous Neighbor.
And you're in the film, too, by the way.
And I'm in the film, a little bit. You hear me more than see me, nonetheless. So we have a lot of mutual friends in common. There are a lot of painters, artists, writers who live in Sullivan County. There are certain places like the Catskill Art Society and a couple of other small galleries where there are shows and people get together, and that's really where I met Tate. I think about 8 years ago now, at an opening. And so we stayed in contact. I mean, I would see him periodically. But I can't say that I knew him very well, but I certainly knew him. And then one day, this was about two, now it's about 3 years ago, I guess. It was one day in summer, in July, I bumped into Tate walking this, you know, mm-hmm. on a street in Livingston Manor, New York, and he was cradling a huge number of toys that he had just found at a yard sale.
Oh, of course.
And
sure.
There was something wonderfully comedic about the image of Tate with all these toys, and we spoke briefly. He told me the significance of each and every one of them.
I'm sure he
in
did.
In great detail.
He elaborated.
He's an elaborator. And then I said, Tate, has anyone ever made a movie about you? And he said, no. And then I said, I'll call you tomorrow. And I think it was the next day that I arrived.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting because I know I've been talking to you, you know, outside of this context of the podcast, but also on the show for probably a span of, I'm going to think, possibly 5 years, I'm guessing. But, and I remember after your last documentary, let's just put it that way, mm-hmm. your last feature documentary, that you were burnt out.
I was.
Because that one was exhausting in so many different ways, and people can go back and listen to those conversations because you describe what you were going through. So,
in the last 10, 15 years, I've made, at this point, 3 or 4 films about mental illness and about drug addiction, and they're pretty heavy and intense movies. I'm Dangerous with Love, Methadonia, and then the last one being sorry.
That's okay. It's not going to come out too much. We're in a car and we're
listening.
We have a five. There are 5 voices in this car at any time. So there's
and then,
your wife, and there's Craig, yeah. and there's also Siri. So sorry.
So the film was an autobiography of Michelle Marin, mm-hmm. which is a story about a woman with borderline. And I think by the time I got to the end of that film, there was something. I just felt like I had fallen into this very dark vortex, and I was exhausted. And I also just felt like I needed to sort of reinvent myself and find a new and different way to make films. And also, I mean, frankly, for years I've been telling myself I have to make a comedy. I have to make a comedy. I have to do something more comedic.
Right.
And I think I recognized in Tate from the very beginning that there was comedic potential mm-hmm. just because of his huge persona and mm-hmm. his intellect and his speed and also the artwork, and some of it is kitsch and funky. And
right.
So I really entered into that project with the intention of having a good time.
It shows in the film. There's a lot of humor in it, and partly executed by our friend Craig Lowy, who had a big hand in that.
Right.
In terms of the animation or the graphics or the what would
motion
you call it?
Graphics.
Motion graphics, thank
motion
you.
Motion graphics, the composite.
Nobody can hear you.
if you don't aim the microphone in my direction, of course no one can hear me. So in terms of compositing, in terms of rotoscoping, in terms of green screen, there's actually a lot of high-tech technical things going on, but the point was to make these high-tech things look not high-tech. To look blended in with a kind of, not just the filmmaking style that Michelle had developed for this film, but also for the artist Tate himself, whose work is kind of a little rough. So that was part of the fun also, was roughening up all these so-called special effects.
Yeah, I mean,
You have some of those circa 1950s sci-fi kinds of animation graphics that, you know, so you would have seen right with the flying saucers and that kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a lot of sort of
B
sci-fi films from the 50s and early 60s, and
right.
and that kind of informs some of the aesthetic and of not only the special effects but of the film too. And it's very appropriate because in terms of Tate and his way of thinking and his influences, you know, he is alien-like. When he once told me that he was a space...
Self-described, yeah.
Yeah, he said he was a space alien. I still believe it on occasion. But
you know what? We all are, because we're all living in outer space. Right. The irony is that we're a planet spinning in outer space, and we're aliens living on this planet, and we've traveled to other... Well, I don't think we've traveled to another planet yet, but we've traveled to a moon.
Traveled to other dimensions.
he may have done that. Yeah, we haven't done that.
The other thing, this is Craig again, is that in terms of whatever effects are used, they're not used for no purpose. They are actually to somehow try to illuminate the inner workings of Tate's imagination and his philosophical output. And that is really the biggest challenge, is to come up with something where you get to feel or think what he feels. And this is the challenge of any documentary filmmaker. How can you go beyond the surface of life and go a little bit deeper? And I think that's one of the challenges that this film has lived up to.
Actually, one of the big inspirations for me was Guy Maddin's film, My Winnipeg.
Right. And it's also in, The Forbidden Room. I don't know if you've seen it, but I think what you're referring to. But I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, he's also the executive producer of the film.
Okay.
Guy Maddin. But
this one's for you, Guy, and which will I'll have to get him on again because he's now at VCFA as well. Thanks.
Yeah. He will be joining our faculty at VCFA.
That's wonderful.
In October of this year. So, I mean, what I found so extraordinary about My Winnipeg is that...
It's a classic.
It's
in its genre.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But I also thought, my God, this is a documentary about Guy Maddin's imagination. And I'd never seen anything quite like it. And so that was the thing that, you know, years ago when I saw the film and mm-hmm. then I met Tate, I really wanted to see if we could, you know, I could make a film that got inside this man's head. Or if not that, the other thing that I was sort of aspiring for was to make a film that almost put the audience inside one of his pieces of art, one of his collages.
Oh, I see.
So as if we're looking at the world, the audience is experiencing the world around them from inside his artwork or inside his head. And, I mean, these are kind of crazy ambitions, but, I mean, to some extent, I think we've succeeded in creating an alternate universe within the film. And, you know, I call it a collage film about a collage artist, and so it uses a lot of his own techniques, with, you know, hard juxtapositions, non-linear transitions. So those were adopted directly from his work, in terms of the way in which the film is made, and then using a lot of our own techniques that are inspired in some way by Tate. So
you stop short though at actually having him participate in the post-production, though.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting. I mean, maybe that would have been a cool idea to get Tate actually involved in some of the special effects. But you know, I think he, from the very beginning, he was pretty clear about it, and he said, you know, this is your film. You make this film. And you do whatever you want. And I don't think he really wanted to be sort of more directly involved. He was curious to see what, you know, we would come up with.
Yeah.
But I don't
What's
think
the
he
exact
really...
opposite of your last experience.
Exactly. Well, you know, the way in which a filmmaker and a subject collaborate on a film is as subtle and mysterious as, you know, life itself. And sometimes it's fluid and seamless, and other times it's not. So I've had all of the above.
I'm just agreeing because I've participated in a few films with Michelle at this point, and that's all I'll say about the previous film.
Okay.
Yeah. We're all happy to be focusing on this new film and your subject. I gotten to know him over the weekend, and he at one point gave me a lift into town even. And so, you know, and he's just a very warm and obviously still on this journey of being excited and giddy about experiences and learning and evolving. You don't see that a lot in guys that age.
Yeah, you know, he's
living
in
upstate or in these, you know.
He's in his early 70s. He lives alone. But, you know, he has...
Has he ever had a marriage or...
No.
Okay.
He almost got married years ago, but that didn't pan out. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, you know, he has such an inventive spirit and a curiosity. You know, Tate lived in a truck for 18 years of his life. And...
Are you saying that...
Literally.
Literally? Literally. He was a truck driver?
No. He lived basically in a large van.
Okay.
Oddly, it was when he was in the Army. And he was in the National Guard working as an electrician and doing electrical work and on radios and things of that nature. And then in order to save money, he lived in this van because they didn't provide housing. If, you know, when you're a full-time employee of the National Guard, which he was for over 20 years. And he was saving money to buy the house that he currently lives in Roscoe, New York.
But for 20 years, how did he... Oh, so in other words, at a certain point, he had enough money to buy a house, but he didn't have that house in mind 20 years before when he started saving.
I think he had some kind of arrangement to sort of pay it off very slowly.
Oh,
but
I see.
He did actually live in the back of this large van.
Okay.
And, you know, he spent a lot of time in libraries.
That had to affect his health, though. I mean, I can't imagine that.
Yeah. Well, he talks a little bit about it in the film.
Yeah.
The winters were pretty rugged, but...
Right.
You know, he spent a lot of time in libraries, you know, to keep warm and to read, use the facilities, I guess, but... you know, he read extensively for those 18 years. I think he always has, but I mean, for those 18 in particular. And, you know, unlike most of us, he remembers every single thing he has read. I mean, he has a mind that is extraordinary. So if you bring up a topic like Greek mythology, he can lecture you for hours on Greek mythology and also aspects of Greek mythology you have never heard of. And the same with astral physics, with just about any subject you can think of.
If only our friend Ian Cheney had just talked to Tate, he could have saved himself all those other people, 13 different people. He could have just had, I'm sure Tate could have spoken for Ian's mother even.
Yeah.
I mean, make a reference to this film. And
13 Ways.
Which we'll be doing a segment with
okay.
Ian.
Right. So, I mean, I think Tate is an amazing inspiration. You know, he can be grouchy. He can be a little difficult. You see that in the film. But that's part of his, you know, his persona. And I accept it.
And, who isn't grouchy?
And I, you know, I'm very, very fond of Tate.
Well, that shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, do you guys have, at this point, have you... have some ideas of where else you would like to show it, ideally?
Well, you know, I think that we've had a pretty successful showing at Camden, and there are already a couple of invitations that have come in for additional festivals. But, you know, we don't have, at the moment, really any very specific plans.
Okay.
And, you know, if my feeling is that if, you know, if worse comes to worse and there's no... the distribution plans, you know, putter out, whatever. I mean, I'd be perfectly happy to put the film up on a website, our website, so people can see it.
Mm-hmm.
At this stage, that would be, you know, that would be fine. And we're going to have a little merchandise page so people can buy Tate's artwork and maybe he'll give me a small commission.
Mm-hmm. Oh, if you go through your website.
Yeah.
Just to shift gears for the moment, what did you become faculty at the Vermont College of Fine Arts? When did that happen? Because I all of a sudden I just heard that you were doing that. I didn't know you were...
I started, I think it's now 5 years. It's amazing how quickly one loses track of time. But I believe it's 5 years now. The program is going into its eighth year, I believe, of the film MFA program. We have a dozen MFA programs at the Vermont College of Fine Arts. This is one of them. You know, on average, we have 30, 35 students in this two-year program. I started there, again, I think 5 years ago. I have to go back and check my calendar.
Mm-hmm.
We're on campus. It's low residency, so we're on campus, you know, for a week in October and a week in April. And then for the 6 months in between, each faculty member is assigned, you know, four, five, or six students to work with on their projects one-on-one for the remainder, for the next 6 months. There's a schedule that's put together, and, you know, so they're deliverables. It's all very carefully organized. But, you know, from the very beginning, I was absolutely astonished by the quality of work that was coming out of the program, and also, you know, the profound commitment to nonfiction, fiction work, experimental work on behalf of the students. So I find myself even today, you know, working on really impressive films by younger people, and you know, it's a real thrill to be. There's something very magical about VCFA, and I don't really know exactly what it is that, you know, how the chemistry of all of this worked out, but it's a very special place, and I'm really amazed by, you know, the work. And it, for instance, Ian Chaney is one of them. I mean, Ian made two feature-length documentaries while he was an MFA student at the Vermont College of Fine Arts. One was the thesis film, which was at Camden very recently. Yesterday, it premiered, which is called 13 Ways. And then he also completed a film that he'd been working on called The Most Unknown, which tracks, if I recall correctly, 13 scientists around the world.
13?
I think it is 12 or 13. It's an interesting...
Nine.
Well, nine is close enough to 13, isn't it?
I was glad. Well, 13 would have been weird because it would have been two different films.
Okay, nine.
It says traversing disciplines from physics to psychology.
Right.
Nine scientists share ideas and seek common ground by delving into deep existential questions.
Fantastic film.
Kind of an
interesting experiment, you know. It reminds me a little bit of Jean Rouch, A Chronicle of a Summer. He sets up a premise, and he meets a scientist. It opens, I think she's a geologist, exploring caves in Italy, and he watches her work for a period of time. And then the two of them travel to the next scientist. And this is a... You know, so in other words, it's like a relay race of sorts that...
the exquisite.
So the scientists sort of meet one another, often for the first time, and because they're in such different disciplines, they're scientists, but they're in different disciplines,
right.
You know, it's an interesting way to explore the subject, and that's what he does. So anyway, Ian is really an amazing young filmmaker. And
another one of your students, I believe, unless I'm mistaken, is George Nicholas.
George Nicholas.
Who's on this podcast.
You've done a podcast with. He was there for... He got his MFA. He teaches in New York. He's a cinematographer and a filmmaker and very active. And, yeah, he was another terrific student. I mean, what I should do is probably look at the list of students I've had in the last couple of years and... so I can everyone's name.
I know
name
you don't want to botch things up. I just mentioned George because he was on the podcast.
Right.
But, you know, right. I don't
And Jason Rosenfeld.
And Jason. He was, yeah. That's right. Because if you go back to those episodes, faithful listeners, you'll hear them talk about how much they got out of...
Well,
if you go back,
they
really speak quite admiringly about you and appreciatively. Let's put it that way.
I think they all love the program because it's incredibly inspiring.
Right.
And, you know, they were terrific. So.
Terrific.
Anyway, so I'm a big, big fan of VCFA. I mean, I've taught over the years at NYU, School of Visual Arts, at Temple, and of all my teaching experiences, this is the one that I find the most exciting.
Yeah. I know one thing that everybody is saying and why I feel absolutely... 100% behind this program is because everybody comes on describes it as a, you know, truly transcendent, magical place and experience, and they could never have imagined just how much they would have gotten out of it. Some of them just do it for practical purposes to get a master's degree so they can continue teaching film, you know, on their own, and so they just do it for practical purposes, but they end up learning so much more about themselves, and they're grateful for that. Who wouldn't be?
Right. I mean, it's true. And I think a lot of it is the student body itself, and because they're, you know, we're bringing together a group of students from all over the country, some international students. For the most part, they don't know one another. And there's a chemistry that is created amongst the students as well. And some of the students are very seasoned filmmakers, you know, in their own right.
Sure.
Looking to get an MFA because they'd like to teach in the future. So, you know, sometimes we have students who have, you know, relatively limited experience as filmmakers. But for the most part, we're dealing with MFA students who are very experienced at VCFA.
Mm-hmm. So no plans on changing course? You're staying with the program for a while?
I'm definitely staying with the program at VCFA. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Great. But thank you, first of all. I you know how much I like you and appreciate you as a friend, as a filmmaker, and a conduit to the Vermont College. No, they've been terrific and very supportive of what I'm doing. So I'm only too happy that, you know, I'm going to interview Michelle again because it just doesn't, it makes complete sense. He's got a new film and you guys, you know, and it's at Camden and the Vermont College.
And there were a lot of terrific films and filmmakers at the Camden Film Festival.
Sure.
So
yeah.
I'm sure you have a plethora of people to talk to.
Sure. Yeah, maybe I'll get invited back. That'd be great. I'd love to go back.
We can get you invited.
All right. Thanks, Michelle.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. We'll be back in a few days with a brand new episode. Oh, by the way, I'm recording this in Woodstock, New York, in a park, hence all the background noise. We'll be back in a few days with a brand new episode of the show. Until then, please do take care of yourselves and the ones you love.
Broken lines, broken strings, broken threads, broken springs.